The Lord may not come when you want him, but he's always going to be there on time. So once said the well-known American actor Louis Gossett Jr. A rather strange quote, don't you think? Sounds like a contradiction in terms, yeah? Or am I missing something? You see, I came across this phrase while I was reading through this morning's gospel passage, and it set me thinking. It's a story which is also told in both Matthew and Luke's gospel as well, although Mark relates it in much more detail, capturing a greater sense of drama and tension. It actually comes hot on the heels of two earlier miracles performed by Jesus, the calming of a storm while he and his disciples were sailing across Lake Galilee, and then the healing of someone who'd been suffering from either mental health issues or spiritual demonic possession, perhaps even both. In any event, Jesus restored him to health in body, mind, and spirit. And so, as we heard, Jesus returns from his voyage across the lake, and the shoreline is teeming with people, shouting and shoving, clamouring to get a glimpse of him. I imagine if it were happening today, folk would be struggling to take selfies with him. Yet, amidst all of this cacophony of noise and confusion, there is one particular guy who manages to gain Jesus's attention. He's not just anybody, either. He's a highly respected leader of the synagogue, responsible for the running of services and the upkeep of the building, rather like a church warden or an elder. The type of authority figure who tended to be suspicious, to the point of being openly hostile in their attitudes towards Jesus. And yet, this guy, whose name we're told is Jairus, is more than happy to set aside any prejudice or misgivings he may well have had about this controversial figure. He's desperate, and I think, given the circumstances, he'd have been willing to turn to anyone, do anything, pay any amount of money, if only it would have achieved the result he craved. The thing is, his young daughter is terminally ill. We're not specifically told what this illness is. Some kind of fever, perhaps. Whatever it is, we're given a very strong sense of how time is of the essence. And so Jesus ignores all the other groupies and attention seekers and agrees, without any hesitation, to accompany Jairus in a bid to heal his daughter. However, things don't go according to plan. Jesus is unexpectedly intercepted. We might ponder as to what on earth could be more important than this life-saving mission. Yet Jesus allows himself to be interrupted, and in the most bizarre manner as well. Someone has touched the edge of his cloak, and he stops and demands to know who did it, to the bewilderment of his disciples. Who touched you? In this crowd, who didn't touch you, is the question. Yet Jesus is insistent. He won't move on until he gets to the truth. And so the culprit nervously steps forward. She's a woman who's been desperately sick for around 12 years, suffering from severe hemorrhaging, coupled with all the pain and discomfort which that would have brought. She would also very likely have been ostracised by her friends and family, as her condition rendered her ritually unclean. See Leviticus 15:25-30. She wouldn't even have been permitted to attend synagogue. Indeed, knowing how easy it was in that society for men to divorce their wives, see Matthew 5:31, it's perhaps safe to assume that her husband most likely has up and left her. She spent all her savings on doctor's bills, how fortunate we are to have our wonderful NHS, but all to no avail. And so she feels that this is her one window of opportunity, the one moment when, just maybe, she might be able to sneak a healing from this amazing miracle worker. No doubt she felt that if she approached him openly, he may well have shunned her. That's the sort of response she would have expected from most other religious leaders who would have been concerned about being contaminated by her uncleanness. By the merest touch of his cloak, she knew without a doubt that she had been healed. And Jesus, although he didn't see her do it, is also aware that a miracle has taken place. I wonder how we feel about that. Jesus isn't just a tap, a commodity that's there for the taking. Jesus becomes aware of the person's need. He somehow feels the power reaching out to them. Why does he insist on confronting her? After all, it's taking up valuable time, isn't it? Perhaps because he wanted the recipient of his power to be fully healed, not only physically, but also emotionally and spiritually as well. When she spills the beans to him, no doubt expecting a tirade of abuse, Jesus calls her daughter, a term of endearment and compassion, and assures her that her faith, both in initially reaching out to him and then stepping out openly to meet him, had brought about her healing. However, it seems that, tragically, this woman's healing came at a terrible cost. I'm sure we can all identify with poor Jairus as he heard that most dreadful news. It's too late. Your daughter has gone. It's all been for nothing. And no doubt Jairus began playing the if-only game. If only he'd managed to contact Jesus sooner. If only that wretched woman hadn't distracted him. If only, if only. I guess we've all played that game when something awful happens. But of course, it never avails anything, does it? It is what it is. You can't turn back the clock. And nothing can be changed. We have to accept it. And yet, what does Jesus say? Don't worry, just have faith. What an incredible statement. But how does Jairus respond? I suspect he's in a state of shock. Perhaps the disciples are half carrying him, half supporting him at this stage, as Jesus and his inner ring, Peter, James and John continue their march undeterred towards Jairus' house. We may be a bit bewildered at the reaction of the folk gathered at the house. They burst out laughing. I mean, really? But in those days, it was customary for professional mourners to turn up at the home of someone who had suffered a bereavement. I know, weird, but different times, different customs, everyone has to make a living, I suppose. But Jesus soon clears them out, leaving only Jairus and his wife, together with Peter, James and John. And Jesus raises the dead girl to life. We're even told the beautiful sounding Aramaic phrase he says in the process, Talitha kum, which literally means little girl, get up, before instructing her parents to give her something to eat. I remember this scene as depicted in the animated movie The Miracle Maker a few years ago, when the little girl is leaping up and down giving high fives to everyone. It's really quite delightful. It's interesting. We're told how the girl was 12 years old, exactly the same length of time that the woman in the crowd had been sick. There seems to be a curious link between these two very different people, doesn't there? Both possibly at different ends of the social spectrum, yet both equally receiving new life from Jesus. While we may well have believed that the woman's needs weren't as urgent as those of Jairus' daughter, yet the point is that Jesus doesn't necessarily view things in the same way as we do. While Jesus healed many people during his ministry, possibly more than the gospel writers tell us, yet that wasn't his main aim. Yes, of course, they were a great blessing to both the recipients of the healings and their families and loved ones. Yet the main purpose in all he did was to introduce people to the love of God in real, utterly relatable ways and enable us to discover how we can encounter his love during even the bleakest of moments. Only last week we were thinking about how Jesus and his disciples encountered a fearsome storm while sailing across Lake Galilee. Of course, we're familiar with the story. We already knew that Jesus would save the day and calm the storm, but for the disciples, experiencing the sheer terror of Mother Nature at her worst, and to find Jesus fast asleep in the back of the boat, it must have been devastating, to say the least. Yet Jesus hadn't abandoned them. He was there all along and he brought them safely through it in a way that transformed the way they viewed the world around them. The truth is, none of us will be exempt from life's storms. Traumas like that which struck Jairus and the nameless woman in the crowd, with all the force of a tsunami on steroids, may well tear through our lives, maybe without any warning. We were never given any guarantees of a problem-free life. Writer and church planter Pete Greig expressed it very well when he said, quite recently, "Sometimes we want God to airlift us out of our problems, but he, more often than not, parachutes in and joins us in the midst of it." Which really summarises the truth behind what's known as the incarnation. God becoming a human being in order to share in all our humanity, all our suffering, and thereby bringing us closer to the Father, and in the process enabling us to share the burdens of one another, sharing his love with one another. As the writer of the Book of Lamentations said, "The Lord's kindness never fails. Deep in my heart I say, the Lord is all I need. I can depend on him." May we each be able to say this prayer from the heart. Amen.